Welcome, Sega fans, to the Sega Guys podcast, the podcast where we party like it's 9999 all the time. James the Segaholic is still enjoying his expanded family right now, but don't worry, he'll be back very soon. In the meantime, we have a very special guest on the show, a longtime Dreamcast fan and a prolific games reviewer on his YouTube channel. Welcome, Shane, aka Steady Sphere. How you doing, mate? How's your day going?
Hello, mate. Not too bad. How's your Sunday faring?
My Sunday is just usual, mental, kids, dogs, you know, Sunday roast, all that sort of stuff. I did get some gaming in earlier when everyone was kind of sleeping. That was my best window. Done any gaming yourself today?
Yeah, been playing this game, Naughty Bear. less said about it, the better, probably.
What's that? Is that the PS3 version or the 360 one?
PS3. It runs like a PS3 version anyway, Jesus.
Yeah, I can imagine. When you say it runs like a PS3 version, I know exactly what you mean in comparison to flashbacks of Bayonetta.
Bayonetta. Oh, poor Bayonetta. You know, beautifully runs on 360. Play it on PS3. I don't know what happened. Well, PS3 happened, basically.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I was talking about Vanquish the other day, which is... It's not quite the reverse, but with Bayonetta, I think Platinum Games outsourced the port, so they didn't actually do it themselves, so it was another developer that did it. Whereas Platinum did Vanquish as the lead platform for PS3, and it's very slightly better than... And I mean, I'm talking, you comb through three pages of Digital Foundry, and the best you come out with is, you know, the shadows are a little better, and the motion blur is a little bit better. So it's not night and day, but it's you can get good stuff out of it. You know, I think
you'd have to know what to do with its insane architecture.
Yeah, it sounds like another favourite console of mine, to be honest. You know, could really sing when developers knew what to do with it, but certain developers, especially Western ones, didn't know what to do with the insane architecture. But it's funny because a lot of people have said that the PlayStation 3 is Sony's Saturn. I think it was Mecha Fatnik actually. Yeah. Put something quite interesting up about the amount of money that they lost in the first 4 years of it being on sale. And if it wasn't Sony with their, you know, their deep pockets, it would have torpedoed any other games company.
Jesus, that's bad. It's a shame. Because it's a good console, but like the third party stuff, some of it, it just is not optimized. It's really poor. Like, as I say, Naughty Bear, you're just walking through the level and it just starts chugging to like 10 frames a second. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
It's crazy when you come from the PS2, which, you know, I love the PS2, but I have to admit, I'm not a big fan of the PS3. It's just, to me, it's kind of a lesser 360. I think the DualShock 3 is worse than the DualShock 2.
Absolutely.
And it feels like they got everything wrong with it. I don't like the UI. I don't like anything apart from it's got some pretty decent games that are exclusive to it still.
Yes, that it kind of got saved in the last bit by the exclusives, you know, like Last of Us, Heavenly Sword, God of War 3. I forgot which one come out for it, bloody hell. Yeah, but the exclusives definitely helped. But yeah, just playing any third parties is no bueno.
No, and we'll lean more into the Sega sort of side of the discussion, but Sega games aren't great on there. I don't know if you've ever played Sonic Unleashed.
No, I got it on, because I think it went on sale on 360 Digital Store, and I knew it went Xbox Series X compatible. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I'll get it for that, get rid of my PS3 version. I never dared to try it.
I was like, yes. So I got it on 360 back in the day. So I had the disc. Because I saw the game in Japan is called Sonic World Adventure, which, you know, straight away I'm thinking Sonic Adventure, great little name there. You know, I've got to have this version. Obviously, it's region free on the PS3 in Japan. Yeah. So I was like, well, I'm going to get that version. Got it, brought it home. I started playing it, and it is horrendous. When we had John Linneman on, and I think I was playing it at the time, and I said, oh yeah, I've been playing Sonic Unleashed on the PS3, and it was like, oh. You could see that he was visibly pained by thinking about going back to it, because I'm pretty sure that they covered it on Digital Foundry.
It's like saying Sonic Heroes PS2. Oh.
Yeah, that's another one, isn't it?
God.
Poor PS2 was really struggling with that one.
Yeah,
Which
I don't know what happened there because the Xbox version is beautiful, runs really nice. Not as good as the GameCube, if I remember right, but still pretty good.
yeah,
And then the
I
PS2 version is just very choppy, very, very disappointing.
yeah, it struggles to hit 30 frames per second most of the time, and that's even with much, it's got lower resolution, far less details. I think it's just the gulf between the PS2 and the other two consoles, really.
Yeah.
Which the PS2 version is the one that sold the most. It makes me think, is the reason why that game has such a bad reputation because most people have played the awful PS2 version.
Exactly. It's like Sonic Adventure. Everyone's like, oh, it's such a terrible game. I'm like, play the Dreamcast original because that's where it shines. You know,
Yeah.
great game. But
Yeah.
I played the 360 version, which is a port of the DC one, I think. Not the DC, Director's Cut, sorry. I have to clarify.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, yeah, the Director's Cut is so bad. Oh, just painful to play. I was like, this isn't even the same game. It's weird.
A copy of a copy of it, if I remember rightly. It is yeah, the GameCube version, which director's cut, which they kind of tried to add more polygons to the models, tried to up the frame rate to 60 frames per second, didn't properly optimize any of it, so it all just runs improperly, drops frames like nobody's business, and because of the changed geometry, you just get increased bugs and collision detection errors. And
Yeah.
then they just did a minimal effort port of that to the PC, and then they did a minimal port of that to the PS3 and 360, and you just end up with an absolute mess. And yeah, it's like you say, mate, everyone says, oh, Sonic Adventure, Sonic didn't age well and whatever. It's like, no, it's a great game. It's
You
just
gotta
these
play the
versions
original.
awful.
You've got to play the original because, as I say, it deserves a lot better. It's a great game. Like, it's one of the first ones I covered on the channel, and I thought it was great. You know, I was like, what's everyone talking about? Why is everyone saying it's so bad? And then I played the 360 update, like, maybe that's why.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so yeah, and that's a great way to lead in, kind of, because obviously you've got a lot of Sega content on your channel, and we'll be talking about your channel in a bit, because obviously that's how we obviously met each other on Twitter, as it was known back then,
Yes,
X now.
don't call it X. Oh. Mm.
No, absolutely not. But yeah, so, and it's through your channel and through social media that we've been friends for a number of years now, at least 4 or 5. So it's great to finally have you on the show. But I think it's one of the things that we always like to do is just talk about our guests' gaming origins. And so that's the first thing I'm going to ask you, Shane, is where did it all start for you?
It's gonna sound bad because obviously this is a Sega channel, but the PlayStation one. My sister, her friend had it. They didn't want it, so they gave it to us. And I think it had Crash Free, Monsters Inc., You That Scare You, or whatever it's called, and Spyro Free. Not a terrible way to go, really.
No.
You know, Crash Free was still my favorite. I know some people can't stand the series. Oh, you die too much, you know, instant death, which is fair enough. I love it. I don't know why. Yeah.
It's because you've came we were born into it. It sounds like, mate, it's your first game. So I mean, I'm one of the ones where I'm not a big fan of Crash, admittedly. Obviously we had the Saturn port on a channel recently, and before that, I have been trying to make my way through the Insane trilogy on
Yeah, because
Xbox. See
that's
if
on Game Pass, isn't it?
it is,
Yeah.
but I bought the disc a while ago. I think I must have had it when it was Xbox One, and I still haven't got anywhere near beating the game. I get up to the Bridge to Nowhere, and
Oh, God.
just
Shudder.
no,
Shudder.
yeah. Which is the ironically was the was Frogball's de demo level in the Saturn port, but there we go. But that's a strong selection of PS1 games that you got there. So I can see why, that was kind of what would they give those away, to be honest? Oh,
I
Monsters
don't know.
Inc. maybe, but Spyro and
I
Crash.
genuinely, it's insane because Spyro Free and Crash Free, I'd say they're the peaks of their series, and they just like, yeah, you have them. I'm like, huh. And yeah, just crazy. And then my sister didn't even enjoy playing it. And I was like, oh, well, I'll have a go. And the rest is history, really. I
Yeah,
mean,
so fell in love,
insane. Yeah.
and where did the journey take you from there?
Well, as I say, PS1, I didn't really buy a lot of games because I was very young. I would have been ooh, probably about six when we got it. PS2, we got a few years later. Sorry again, Sega fans, because, poor Dreamcast. But yeah, PS2, fell in love with that. Got stuff like God of War. That was amazing. Stuff like Resident Evil 4 and all those sort of quality games, Ratchet and Clank. Still love that. And then 360, which was kind of like everyone had an Xbox 360. It was insane. I don't think I knew anyone who had the PS3 when I was in school. It was insane,
Yeah.
Everyone's on COD 4, Modern Warfare 2, and all that. I tended to buy just weird titles like, oh, I can't wait for Lego Indiana Jones. I'm like, I don't know why, but I love trying different games, And yeah, I love talking about them, as you know.
Yeah. And you seem to have a very strong affinity for the Dreamcast. So, where did that fit in? So, did you get the Dreamcast after 360 or?
The Dreamcast I got in 2017 because it wasn't too long after I joined Twitter. I think I saw guys like you and other Sega people showing it off, Soul Calibur. I'm like, oh. I really love to try this. I wonder if they've got any on eBay. It wasn't too bad a price. Came with Soul Calibur, which is obviously a very good start. And then I got it, played it, and I was blown away. I was like, wow, this was really ahead of its time. Soul Calibur, it's insane how good that game still looks. Like the graphics are just incredible and it's so content rich. It's quite weird going back to modern games where they're like, oh, we're gonna cut this and put it in the DLC. Oh, like Street Fighter X Tekken. Oh, we're gonna lock all the characters onto a DLC thing. And it's just like, ugh. Going back to Soul Calibur, it's so content rich from the box. That's just great,
It really is. So that's interesting because the way that you've talked about the Dreamcast and the way that it's features quite heavily on your channel, I thought that that was one of the that was you went from PS1 to Dreamcast. But the fact that you've came into it quite a lot later and seem to have a lot of affection for it, is really telling. It's quite amazing, really, that coming into it in 2017 and it's still having that impact is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know what it is about it. I don't know if it's the way the games look or because it has a distinctive visuals kind of, I don't know how you call it. Is it the checkerboarding type thing? I can't. There's a unique visual thing that the Dreamcast has, and every game, it's a Dreamcast game,
Yeah.
Whereas anything after, it's kind of, here and there. Especially now, everything's Unreal Engine,
Yeah.
looks kind of the same. And yeah, I just really like the way Dreamcast games actually look. There's just something about it. It's charming, And it's also a lot of fun games that range from you could pick them up and play like Crazy Taxi or sink hundreds of hours into it like Skies of Arcadia. It's insane. The library's just really vast.
Yeah, you've got a bit of everything in there, and I think the visuals. I think it's one of the first when you go back to obviously we're big fans of the Sega Saturn here, and obviously PS1 as well. Going back to that generation and N64 as well, they are all very unique, but they all you couldn't mistake any of their games for being modern games. Whereas the Dreamcast, even though a lot of games do show their age a bit, I think a lot of games on there are quite timeless looking, and you could probably forgive them for games today, to be honest, for a few of them.
Absolutely. I mean, like I say, Soul Calibur still is a really stunning fighter. It beats quite a few PS2 fighters, I'd argue. Obviously Tekken 5 and that blew it out of the water, but that's also still Namco. So Namco were just something else. I wish they made more games for Dreamcast, really. Only
Yeah,
two.
I know.
That's insane because they got so much out of the Dreamcast and then just did Mr. Driller and went, all right, we're done.
Which is insane because they actually made a couple of Naomi games, although the names of escape me right now. But they did make a couple of the games on the Naomi arcade board, but never brought them to Dreamcast.
Yeah, that's even crazier because, like your video recently with Dreamcast on Naomi, it's so easy to bring it over. I don't know why. I guess they gave up, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's It's a shame because they had their support so early on with such an iconic game that was, it was Soul Calibur was pretty much selling consoles by itself back on release, and for them to kind of not take it any further than that is just it's just a shame, really. I would have loved to
Yeah.
see what a Dreamcast version of Tekken Tag
Oh,
Tournament might have looked like.
could you imagine? That would have been just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I don't think Sony would have allowed that
Probably not.
though.
There's one thing we all know about Sony is they can be a bit petty,
Yeah,
just a little bit,
just a little.
just a little bit.
So that's your journey into gaming then. And then the channel itself then. So how did that come about?
Well, you kind of have to go back a bit because I've been writing reviews since about 2022, no, 2000 and 2006 or so, I would say.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I used to write for what we call consumer sites. So it was called doyou.co.uk and another one called chow.co.uk. You'd basically write about stuff and you could make money from it. So, do you? I started off very bad. I remember I wrote my first review and someone basically said, next time, maybe don't just rewrite what you read in the manual. And I went, it's like brutal, man. Brutal. But okay. The guy who I currently write for, Tom Clare, he was on the site as well, and that's how we kind of first met
Okay.
up. But yeah, I wrote on there for about must have been 6 years or so. Yeah, would have been 6 years. Because eventually those sites kind of just died out. I assume not enough traction or not enough members. But what then happened is I got contacted by Tom on what somewhere must have been Twitter. Was Twitter a thing in 2012? I genuinely can't
Yeah, it
remember.
would have been. It would have
Yeah.
been. I joined in 2011.
Yeah. So he contacted me on Twitter and said, hi, how's it going? I'm started this website called The Pixel Empire, and I really want you to come and write for me. And I said, yeah, sure, why not? And that was in 2012, and we're still going. So the site is kind of what we sort of go by is all games, all eras in context. So what that means is all games, we try and cover as many platforms as possible. Tom, bless him, he's like, I'm gonna cover a Mega Duck game. I'm like, what the hell is a Mega Duck? Like, I have no idea what this platform is, but you go for it, man.
I've never heard of a Mega Duck before.
No, I'm like, oh yeah, and he's got this one, it's got like a handle on it. I don't know what it's called. It's recent. But yeah, I'm just like, yeah, you go for it. Me.
Oh, the handheld that you charge up by winding it.
That's it. Yeah. He's got one of them. I'm like, you're mad, but sure. Whatever floats your boat, mate. He's like, I love the obscure platforms. Me, I like the obscure games, so it works out in a way. But it was about it was 2018. I started the channel. I was just like, I really because I'm nostalgic for old school GameSpot, and I remember back when go on the website, read the review, and then you could also get the video review with like Jeff Gertzman and people like that on it. And I kind of felt like I wanted to do something like that, where you get to the point, don't kind of not bloat it, but just say what you got to say, say whether the game's good, get in and get out. If that makes sense. Because I don't make super long videos, as you know, but I feel like I get as much of out of the sort of the shorter runtime as I can. Yeah, no. So, as I say, it started off first ever review was Soul Calibur. So, you can thank the Dreamcast for the channel in the way as well. Because I think that game just really stoked a passion in me for videos. Because I did an arcade run and I thought, that's cool. But you know what would be cooler if I did a video review? And this is kind of history.
Awesome. And to the Dreamcast side, the Dreamcast playlist on there is, I think, probably the biggest one. The
I
biggest for a
believe it
single
is.
con
I
for a
believe.
biggest yeah, for a single console. Obviously, if you put all the PlayStation ones together, there's a big chunk of PS1, PS2, PS3. But
Yeah.
as a single console, the Dreamcast seems to take, it seems to be in the lead at the moment. Obviously, the reviews are still coming, so
Oh, yeah.
that could be subject to change. But So there's a great presence of the Dreamcast on there. And then obviously you've got a bunch of other Sega games on there. So you've got Yakuza, Judgment, Panzer Dragoon Orta, OutRun 2, Bayonetta. I think the most recent one on there was the Sega Olympic Games title that they had
Yes,
the
yes.
Olympic. It was the Tokyo time, wasn't it?
That's the one. Yep, the Tokyo one. They didn't do one for the Olympics this year. I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah, it was actually the Olympic Committee that I don't know if you saw the article on it.
Yeah,
That
because they're like,
the
basically, they didn't want to do it. And I was just like, oh, come on, man. There's
that
a charm to them, you know? It's fun.
yeah, that they wanted to do something with mobile games and NFTs was,
Oh.
and they thought there was more money in that than doing another official game with Sega and a Mario and Sonic at the Olympics with Sega and Nintendo, which those Mario and Sonic at the Olympics games and pretty mindless, but I'm a big fan of those sort of games. I do need to pick up that Tokyo game because it looked right up my alley, really. I'm a big fan of the I don't think you've ever played Athlete Kings on the Sega Saturn, but Virtual Athlete 2K,
That rings a bell. I don't think I've played it, but
that's on the Dreamcast. Yeah, so Sega have got kind of a lineage for that sort of thing.
yeah, they know how to make a good sports game. Like even
Yeah.
that Sega Extreme Sports, that was really fun, and it's distinctly Sega. I don't know what it sounds a bit weird saying that, but do you know what I mean? Like you know
Yeah.
it's a Sega game.
Yeah. I mean, all their modern game, even their modern stuff, you can tell it's Sega. It's got a kind of quirkiness to it, a sort of zaniness. And even though it's most overt in something like a Dragon or Judgment, but you still get it in stuff like Binary Domain and Vanquish and stuff. It's kind
Definitely.
of that feel. But yeah, you're getting up to it's well saying getting up to. You've done over 300 reviews now, haven't you? So
I think
that's quite a
it's
lot.
320 as of this week, which is
Interesting.
just it's crazy to me.
It's
That's crazy. I don't
an
know.
insane amount. And I do love your reviews. I do tune in every week. Sometimes like this week I managed to get on as soon as it went, pretty much as soon as it went live. Sometimes I don't get on until a couple of days later, depending on what my weekend's looking like. But I do actually look forward to them. And what I like about your reviews is obviously they're just your pure honest opinion. And that sounds crazy because that's what a review should be. But it just seems like reviews, just in general, not just today, but even going back, there's always some sort of narrative that's being pushed with it.
Yeah.
There's always some sort of kind of undertone or ulterior motive or something or a bias that's sitting in there.
Oh, yes.
And I think a good example of that is kind of your Sonic Adventure one. You see, if it was me reviewing it, I would have said it's a 10 out of 10 game. It's one of the best games of all time. If it was someone from the modern media, they'd probably say it's a 5 out of 10, and Sonic never had a rough transition. But yours just hit that kind of sweet spot. I thought it's your personal opinion, but without any sort of bias or narrative or anything. It just told the facts, and that's what I love about your content and your videos and your reviews. That's what appeals to them for me. And I think that's for anyone that's listening and watching right now, I think that's what they should expect if they tune into your channel.
No, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. Yeah, I mean, like, do you know, oh, what's it called? Sounds bad. The monkey game. Is it Black Myth Wukong?
Yes, Black Myth Wukong, yeah.
Like that review that keeps doing the rounds. Oh, not enough diversity. I mean, just judge the game on its merits, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying make games offensive and rude and horrible, but what I mean is, like, don't bring your personal bias into it. Like that's what I try and do anyway. I judge it in its context. So Sonic Adventure, if I were to review Sonic Adventure from a 2024 mindset, I probably would have dropped a few points off it. But I reviewed it in the mindset of it's a new system, it's a launch title, and it's really rather good. In fact, it's great for that launch sort of, because a lot of launch titles, they come out, they're paper thin. You know, they're just tech demos. But Sonic Adventure felt different. It felt fully featured. It felt fun and sort of not like, I don't know if fresh is the word, but you know, it felt like Sonic, but it didn't feel like 2D Sonic. It felt
Yeah.
proper new direction.
Yeah.
So I brought it up in another interview I did, like with the Tomb Raider, you could, if you review Tomb Raider by 2024 standards, it's probably a five. Say it. It's very clunky, like, but what you have to remember is it came out in 1996.
Yeah.
There was not a lot of 3D sort of systems in place, really, was there? You know, like, you didn't have games like Resident Evil 4 or God of War sort of setting any template. 96 is like Wild Wild West of 3D.
Yeah.
You know, they're all trying to figure out, okay, we got to jump into a new kind of dimension. How are we going to do that sort of thing? Some companies thrived, like Capcom. I'd say Sega, in a way. Others, not so much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It really was like the Wild Wild West out there. The 90s really was this kind of new frontier of gaming. And you do kind of have to put yourself in the shoes of kind of developers back then, because there were no set standards. As you say, you know, we hadn't had Resident Evil 4 to kind of redefine what 3D movement should look like in that space. And that's why I think some of those games are so interesting and exciting. I don't know necessarily if they'd be bad today, because I think sometimes we just feel conditioned to play games a certain way, I think, sometimes. Yeah. So stuff like you generally expect a third-person shooter to play a certain way. I remember playing, it wasn't too long ago, actually, I played a game called Freedom Fighters.
Oh, yeah.
On the original Xbox. And I thought that was a fantastic game. But, yeah, the control system, by today's standards, wouldn't have been intuitive, but it doesn't take too long to get used to it, but it's just not what you'd expect from the kind of the here and now.
Yeah, because again, I think that game came out 2 years before Resident Evil 4. So there was no real third-person template. It was just, again, everyone's just trying to make it work, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, Freedom Fighters, if I remember right, it was very, very enjoyable because, you know, like you say, it's a bit weird at first because it plays a bit like Hitman, oddly, because it's probably the same.
I think it is IO, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, IO. Why they haven't made a second one, I have no idea. But
no.
Hey ho. Yeah, no, it's that whole, once you get used to it, it's natural, second nature. But I think the trouble is, unfortunately, a lot of younger gamers don't have patience to try these games.
No.
Which one was it? They put it on PS5 as a PS Plus. Star Wars Demolition. I had two comments basically saying, this game is trash. I played it on the PS5. I'm like, well, yeah, no sugar, mate. Like, of course it's not going to be as good as your other PS5 games. You're playing it like 24 years out of its time.
Yeah.
And they're like, at least no one said, oh, why'd you give it a 7? It's terrible. I played it on the PS5. I was like, I've been like, oh, fuck me.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? Everyone expects a certain thing. It's so funny. I mean, obviously, I've been gaming for well over 35 years now. And, you know, I remember gaming being completely different. And loading being something that takes, like, half an hour rather than, you know, a matter of minutes, and games being impossible to complete, littered with bugs and stuff. But there's, you know, you get something different all the time, whereas now it seems almost to the detriment, everything's kind of very similar, very similar template.
And they say they're all Unreal Engine or Unity or same sort of thing, aren't they?
Yeah.
They look similar.
Yeah, to the extent it seems like, you know, most people don't even gravitate away from a single game these days. You know, kids just seem to play Fortnite forever.
Yep. Or Warzone or whatever hits. There's that First Descendant. I saw that was doing quite well.
But yeah.
Yeah, like you say, games just trying to chase the trends, and everyone wants that live service trend. So look at Concord. It's not doing well, though. So.
Oh, that sounds like that's been a disaster. It's a shame. Obviously, all these games are passion projects from the devs. For some reason, I don't know whether they were told to go in a specific direction, whether that was what their passion was, or whether that was something that came from on high, or for whatever reason, it's just not worked out for them. Which is always a shame. You don't want to see any game really do badly. But
no, especially as it's so volatile in the game industry as well. Like companies just being shut. Visions of Mana. Apparently, the studio
Yes.
just literally shut as soon as they finished.
Yeah.
It's like,
Yeah.
Christ, man. What? How? How's it happened?
That, yeah, I was about to say, yeah, when you said that, it was. I saw that in the news the other day, and I was like, how does that happen? Because like they don't even know if the game has performed well yet. They don't know anything about whether it's been a success or not. It's
They
just
haven't
like
even
when
had a
you,
chance to kind of fail. It's just,
yeah,
that's it. Done. You're done. It's like,
which is
wow.
then you get, oh God, what's the studio that made Hi-Fi Rush?
Oh, Tango.
Tango Gameworks, and yeah, they had a game that was successful, won loads of awards and was critically acclaimed, and their studio almost got shuttered and bailed out at the last minute.
Yeah, I was really happy to see the Krafton sort of rescued them because, like you say, they made a game that's arguably Microsoft's highest rated exclusive of the gen. I think it might be, yeah, because Halo Infinite, I don't think scored that highly. Starfield, everyone said it'd be game of the generation. I think it got 83, which is,
Yeah.
it's, I shouldn't, what, I don't, because Metacritic, everyone puts a lot of weight on it, and it's just, it's a number, isn't it? At the end of the day,
Yeah.
it's how you enjoy the game. But
Exactly.
Hi-Fi Rush, everyone adored it. It did pretty well on Game Pass, and it still wasn't enough. I don't understand it. I really don't.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I know. It's bizarre, but I suppose that's just modern gaming. It does seem to be a bit extremely volatile at the moment.
Yeah.
We seem to have had that boom coming out of COVID, and yeah, it seems to be kind of shrinking again. I don't think modern consoles are doing particularly well, and
No.
the series consoles are selling behind the Xbox One and the PS5. I hear mixed things, but then they've just bumped the price up for that. I mean, we're 4 years into the generation and they're putting the price up, which is
Yeah.
insane to me.
I was gonna say, I remember the days when the consoles would drop in price and then you get them cheaper. Not the other way around. That's really weird.
Think 4 years into 4 years after launch, the Sega Dreamcast was selling for like 50 quid in some shops, maybe less.
Oh God, that's mental. God, I wish I was smart back. I wish I was smart when I was younger. Oh.
Oh, that we everyone has those same regrets.
I
Everyone's got a story about.
might have got a copy of Cannon Spike for like 20 quid instead of wishing to get it when it's 230 something pound on ZX.
I had a copy of Cannon Spike, and I had a Dreamcast and the Super Nintendo, and I used to take it to my girlfriend at the time who lived in Birmingham. And we split up, and I left the Dreamcast and a number of games there. I remember one was Giga Wing 2, the other was Cannon Spike. There was a few others, Virtual Cop, Virtual, I don't know, Virtual, it was House of the Dead 2 and the Gun as
Oh
well.
yeah.
So that
Oh
was
mate.
gutting. And it was my entire SNES collection. It wasn't massive, but.
No, still it's games, it sucks, man. That's why.
Yeah. But yeah, so coming back to your channel, I mean, we've been on a bit of a tangent there, but we were talking about how, a lot of gamers and a lot of games are very similar feeling today, and that all chase similar trends. And one thing that I do like about your channel is that there's quite an eclectic mix on here. There's a number of like WiiWare games on the Wii U that you've done in the past, and it's just like, I didn't even know this existed. That sounds pretty cool. Obviously, no way for me to legally get my hands on those now.
No,
But
don't. I was gonna say, don't get me started on Nintendo. Jesus, I, yeah.
And then you had like the Muppets Kart Racer on PS1 recently, which I wasn't sure what to expect when I opened the review up, but it sounded pretty decent. And again, a game that I would have passed over. It sounds like something that I'd probably like to play given the opportunity. So it's good that as Tom says, all eras, all consoles, and you're picking up things that are kind of you don't hear a lot about, which I think is really cool.
No, thank you. Because obviously with YouTube, I keep getting told, "Oh, you should cover newer games," or not from Tom. Tom is like, "You cover whatever the heck you want, mate. If you want to cover that Tunguska game on PS1, feel free." I said, like, "No, I don't want to," but yeah, but yeah, he gives me free rein. But I get people who are like, "Oh, well, if you covered newer games, or oh, why don't you time? You should have covered an alien game because it's August. I'm like, that's not what I really want to do. I want to shine a light on more obscure games, you know, like Dragon Valor on PS1.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people were like, holy hell, I've played a demo of this, but I've couldn't remember the game for the life of me, but thank you for reminding me, sort of thing. You know, it's just like, I'm not chasing trends or anything. I cover basically what I want to cover, but I do try and keep it varied, as you see. So like, yeah, this month, I think I've got, what am I covering? PS2, Dreamcast, PS4, and Series X. So nice little spread. Nice little spread. No, no.
Going through the generations there.
Yeah.
In a way. What Dreamcast game you got covered? Got lined up?
It's called Dragon Riders Chronicles of Pern. I don't want to give too much away, but it's a game.
Yeah, it's not one I'm intimately familiar with, so I'll keep my eye out for that one.
Yeah.
So you've got quite a lot of coverage on a variety of consoles, and you've got them nicely arranged into your playlists. You've got some great playlists on it. You've got your Sega Month one that you did a few years ago. God. Yeah, I remember. I remember seeing it. And I think that was that for the Sega 60th, the Go Sega.
I think I timed it for that. Yeah, sometimes I like to time for special things, but not so much like, oh, so I can get the YouTube clicks. You know, I like Sega. They don't tend to annoy me like some companies do. And I thought it'd be nice and fun, you know.
Oh, that sounds like someone that didn't have to grow up with them in the
90s. Yeah, no.
When they did annoy you for doing stupid crap all the time.
But
at least the games were good.
That's the thing. The games are good. But, well, I say that. The one time they did upset me, Aliens, Colonial Marines.
Yes.
That wasn't really their fault, I guess. But it is, because they published it, so...
Yeah, they gave it to Gearbox, and Gearbox gave it to someone else, didn't they?
Yeah, well, you were saying about the Sonic Adventure hand-me-down. It was like, okay, Gearbox, they gave it to someone, and then they gave it to someone. It's like, no wonder it turned out so crap.
Yeah.
God.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I know what you mean about the kind of the... You're trying to get the algorithm to work on your side sometimes. It's just... It's one of those things, and you have that question, you know, if I do this, it'll be popular, but I'd really want to do this. And, you know, at the moment, I'm working on something for Sonic and Knuckles because it's the 30th anniversary. I mean, and that's because I want to, not because I think that will get a lot of clicks, because I guarantee it won't, because all the noise isn't about Sonic and Knuckles at the moment. It's about Sonic and Shadows.
Oh, yes. yes. Good old
Keanu. Oh, yeah, I love the trailer for that.
Yeah.
You're a colourful bunch.
Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. So, yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, we've been quite fortunate because the homebrew stuff seems to be popular, and that's something that we're interested in, because obviously it's, you know, it's new games for our old Sega hardware. So that's exciting. It seems something, we seem to be quite fortunate that's popular with the audiences as well. But, you know, it comes in peaks and troughs, you know. Sometimes, as you well know, I've seen you've got views in the thousands on some videos, and like us, it will drop down again. So it really is that YouTube lottery sometimes, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the weird one was the Fifth Element. Like, I think that's the first video I've done where it got up to 1K within the week it got published, because a lot of the videos are kind of slow burn. So like, they'll start off a little kind of slow, and then over time it becomes like C12, where it's got like 11,000 views. And, you know, I don't do it for views anyway, but it's nice.
Yeah.
Fifth Element, I put it up. I didn't time it with anything or like an anniversary. I put it up and 1,000 views within the week. I was like, oh, okay. People like really bad PS1 games.
Sometimes it's that negativity sells, isn't it?
Negativity.
Yeah. Oh, dear. But it's kind of that thing that we're doing. You know, what you're doing, and you know what we try to do is you just build a kind of a catalogue of your opinion and of some of these games that you feel like people need to give more attention to.
Yeah,
isn't it? You know, Sega themselves are really, they really aren't in the modern gaming conversation. Even, you know, history is written by the victors, and the whole conversation is all around, well, Sony and Nintendo did this. And I think Sega Lord X has put it best. It's like, you know, where's the narrative? Where's our narrative? Where's the narrative of the guy that grew up loving Sega and thought that his Sega console was the greatest thing that he ever played? So yeah, and that's why we do what we do. And imagine it's kind of similar for you. You're putting your opinions out there and cataloging these a lot of the time quite eclectic games out there that feel like they need more attention, or in some cases people need to be warned off of.
Yeah, because trust me, there is some real bad stuff out there. Like, people are like, I'm trying to think, Star Wars Outlaws, the worst game ever. I'm like, go try Star Wars Masters of Terras Cassie, or whatever it's called, the fighting game on PS1, and then come back.
I was scrolling through your playlist earlier, and I spotted Devil's Third. I was like, oh, I remember this one.
that was something else. I mean, Lord Almighty. I don't like to be too harsh, because at the end of the day, like you say, someone makes these games.
Yeah,
I mean, a developer might watch that video and go, oh my God, he's just trashed my work. I'm not trying to do that. But at the end of the day, if a game's not fun, it's not fun, unfortunately. You can't really hide that. And Devil's Third, I don't know what they were thinking, but that was a very long gestating game, I believe. Because I think, wasn't it 360 originally? And then it got moved to Wii U?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. It was very long gestated, and...
I think it might have started on an Xbox and moved to PS3 or something like that. It was one of those where it ping-ponged to several platforms.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a car crash.
That's the nicest way of putting it.
Yeah. So you go back to the PS1. Have you ever been tempted to go any further back than that?
Absolutely. I mean, I've got a Mega Drive Mini, and to be honest with you, I've really kind of, what's the word? Not giving it enough time. I think the trouble is the difficulty not scares me, but it's quite like, well, I find it difficult. Can I review it if I use save states and things like that? You know, so I don't know where I'm trying to figure it out in my head, but I hope to one day cover, you know, like Mega Drive, because Mega Drive's awesome. I've played a bit of it. I mean, like Sonic 1, 2, and 3, classic, obviously.
No,
played absolutely. Comic Zone once, that was awesome, but I got absolutely nowhere in it.
That game is brutal. That game is absolutely brutal. Got to the last boss once, or maybe twice. However many times I got to, either once or both times, I lasted about 10 seconds, and that was the game. It was absolutely brutal getting there. And I'm not talking recently. Like, I got there, I got the game in what it would have been 96. I got it, and it would have been when I didn't really have anything else to play, because I was trying to save up for my Sega Saturn. I saw the game for like 15 quid with the soundtrack CD in a shop around the corner. So I was like, right, I'll get this, and then that's it until I get a Saturn. So I was playing it nonstop, and it's brutal. Yeah. But I'd say you save states. I mean, honestly, you put yourself in my shoes or James' shoes, right? And like today, I've been trying to record footage for a video, and it was a Sonic one, and I did not even get past the first act without having to pause it about three times, and then after the act finished, I just saved it and left it. Just thought, I'm not going to get any more time to do this. So I think save states are perfectly valid for this sort of stuff. You know, as long as you don't abuse them, I guess. You miss out on some of the kind of the nature of how it's meant to be enjoyed. I think if you kind of saving it, you know, you have those tool assisted runs, don't you? If you're saving it before every enemy. But I still use them for Revenge of Shinobi.
Oh yeah,
that's brutally hard still. It was a game I could never get past the second stage when I was a kid. I can get further in it now, but I still have to use, you know, save it at the beginning of that level, so effectively give myself infinite continued.
Yeah.
But that, you know, because obviously if your first console is the PS1, you're coming from a completely different era, aren't you? Because you're not from the era where your game is really end to end, probably about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But that runtime is protracted because it makes it so difficult to get anywhere for it. Whereas your PlayStation was a lot more giving you like the longer form experiences. Although Crash arguably kind of sits in between the two
Yeah, I
because
was
it's
gonna
still
say, because
brutally hard.
Crash is kind of like almost a throwback to not quite as brutal, obviously. I mean, if I could, if all the SNES games and Mega Drive games were as easy as Crash, I'd be happy. But it's not the case. But yeah, no, it was kind of the middle, and especially the first game. I've never actually beaten the first game outside of the Insane trilogy, because it's just that bridge, man, that freaking
Yeah,
bridge.
I'm glad it's not just me. I'm glad that I've got a bona fide Crash vet here who played it at the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like brutal. Like, you jump and then fall, jump, fall, jump, fall. That's the bridge level, basically, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Because anyone who beats it first try is lying. Let's just say, or says they beat it first try.
I know we're veering into Crash again here with on a Sega pod, but it's those planks that are broken
Oh,
that you can't
literally
even jump
broken.
onto.
Yeah.
I just think, what sort of sadists could design this? Like, what's wrong with you? Whoever it is at Naughty Dog that designed that.
Yeah, they're just no respect for the gamer.
No. Oh, yeah. So great selection of reviews on your channel. Covers so much stuff. And yeah, if you do start covering Mega Drive stuff, obviously, love to see that, obviously, from our side. Any additional Sega stuff will be there day one, you know.
Of course.
Even if it's if, any experience with the Saturn or anything, you think Saturn Master System or
Well, I
any
was
of
going to
those to
say, Master System, no, unfortunately. I've just never had one, and I don't think, have they ever ported any of their games anywhere else?
You've had kind of Alex Kidd
Yeah.
in Miracle World DX,
Oh,
and
that one, yeah.
Wonder Boy 3 got a port as well, and I think
Okay.
there's a few others.
Yeah.
Because
So
it's, I think it's
they're, yeah, they're ones I could play then, but I don't think I've got around to it.
yeah.
Saturn, I know I've played Knights and Fighting Vipers 2 and, no, Fighting Vipers 1, sorry,
Yeah.
and Sonic the Fighters, because as you probably know, they came to 360, which was handy.
Sonic the Fighters is an interesting one. Sonic the Fighters actually never came to Saturn, but Fighting Vipers, obviously, I know it's the arcade version in there, but it's yeah, that's a great game on Saturn. And Nights into Dreams, one of my favorite games of all time, absolutely magical game.
I really enjoyed going back to it. Well, going back to it, you know what I mean? Like playing it for the first time through the 360 update. It was, yeah, really good.
It's such a unique experience, and it is in itself kind of a throwback. It's unique, but it very much is a game that just really embodies 1980s kind of high score chasing,
Yeah.
more than anything else. But I think its biggest downfall was the fact that at the start, people didn't really know how to market it. Sega America were a bit clueless about it, really, because they wanted something to take on Mario 64 and Crash Bandicoot, and ended up with this game that's fundamentally quite different
Yeah,
to either of them.
nothing like either of those games,
No.
but it's all the better for it, I'd argue. Like,
Yeah, absolutely. That's why it remains one of my favorite games of all time. Speaking of favorite games of all time, mate, I think we'll get on to the my favorite Sega part of the chat now. We'll start off, I think, with your favorite music. Now, we spoke a little bit before, and I think you've got two choices here. So what we'll do is we'll play one now, and then we'll play one to close us out. So what's your first favorite track that you'd like to play?
Well, it's not from a Sega console, but it is from one of Sega's first games that they put out after they went third party, Panzer Dragoon Orta. It's from the fourth mission, Gigantic Battle, and it's just epic is probably the best word I can use to describe it. A lot of the music in that game I really like. There's just something about it. It's almost ethereal and really myth-like. Mysterious, and it sticks with you, and a lot of Sega music sticks with me. It was really hard to narrow it down, because like Shenmue 2 has some of my favorite music as well.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like picking two was so difficult, but yeah, Gigantic Attack from Panzer Dragoon Orta, I'll go with first.
Brilliant. Let's play that right now. Gigantic Attack, brilliant choice there. I've got to say, I am a little bit disappointed in myself because I don't know the Orta soundtrack that well. I could tell you any of the other ones from any of the other games, but Orta, for some reason, I am a little bit blank on it. But it is still Orta's greatest success, is it still feels very much in the same of the original games, in terms of music arrangement and general feel about it. It's a great choice there. Hopefully you'll get the chance to play the originals. I know Panzer Dragoon got a port, obviously, or a remake rather, not rather than a port. I've got a remake. Actually, the original Panzer Dragoon is in Orta, isn't it?
It is, and I did give it a bit of a spin. And again, it's that sort of, I don't know how you say it, distinctive Saturn feel. Like
Yeah.
you can tell it's a Sega Saturn game. Like it wouldn't have worked on a different console because it doesn't compute, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, John Linneman did a great video on it, showcasing all kind of all the ports of it onto various systems. And the Saturn is very unique in the way that it does things. Even kind of the PC ports kind of struggle to re replicate some of what it does. And this Xbox is a port of that. But I think the Xbox port is it does pretty well. You have to I'm trying to remember what the conditions are for unlocking it.
It was something like 10 hours of play, I think. Or no, that sounds too easy. Was it
I was going to
20?
say that might be. I think the
It was something like that.
Yeah, the main game is probably it's quite a chunky game, isn't it? I mean, compared to the original which you can burn through in about an hour,
Yeah.
by comparison, what was quite a bit more of a substantial experience. So it's only a few playthroughs to really get to that 10-hour mark. It's been a while since I played it, actually. I really need to get around to it again.
And again, that's one on Series X. Well, I really think I need to try it on Series X one day because the Series X really brings some of these 360 and Xbox games to life. It's incredible.
It really does. Like stuff like FPS Boost is
Oh,
invaluable.
it's amazing.
Sonic Generations and Sonic Unleashed are fantastic playing it.
Yeah.
Bayonetta was pretty much a locked 60 anyway,
Yeah.
on
But
the
it just felt a
platform.
little bit kind of smoother with to
Yeah.
me. I don't know. And like Vanquish again, pretty smooth anyway, but it just locks it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it just adds a little something. It's one of the best things about the Series X is that backwards compatibility.
Absolutely.
And they've got a
Absolutely.
number of games that come on there. I think the thing about Orta is I got it for my original Xbox, loved it. And then I got a 360. My original Xbox was the drive died, and I'd
Oh,
replaced
yeah.
it about three times. And the 360 version, the 360 backwards compatibility for Orta, infamously the PAL version, crashes after mission three. And there was a
Yeah.
way to get around it. And I was just like, I can't afford to do that. You kind of just had to leave the game playing or something for like however long. I was like, I'm not going to do that. They'll
No.
fix backwards compatibility eventually. And then they didn't. And it wasn't until it came to Xbox Series, or maybe it was Xbox One, that we actually got it backwards compatible again. And
Yeah.
sadly, I just haven't given it enough time. I had a few attempts at it, but I really need to knuckle down and get it done.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't recommend it enough. It's, I think, gave it 9 out of 10, which some would be like, oh, it's not 10, so can't be that good. But, you know, it's like, it's near enough perfect as you can get without being, and I mean, 10 out of 10 isn't perfect necessarily. Either, every
No.
game. I don't think I can think of very few. Maybe Soul Calibur is like pristine. I can't think of anything wrong with Soul Calibur.
No.
But other
No, I
than
think.
that, even like Metal Gear Solid or God of War, it has those bits which just make you grind your teeth. Bloody key cards.
The original God of War, I'm not a big fan of. I fell in love with it in the second game and the PSP games.
Yes,
The
Ghost
first.
of Sparta was fantastic. Like, it was basically like for like a PS2 game on a handheld. It's insane. It's insane.
The thing that I played the first one on PS3 and I just wasn't overly keen. I just thought it felt a bit cheap at some points. But then I
Yeah.
played the PSP ones because they're kind of intercalls, and then I played the second one, and then after playing the second one, it became my favorite PlayStation series. I absolutely adored the second one. I loved the second one so much. The third one kind of felt a little bit disappointing to me.
I'm quite relieved to hear that because I'm the same. I don't know what it was about three, like absolutely stunning game, but the pacing is really off. Like it obviously opens with that epic battle of I think Titans versus Gods. Then you fall into Hades again. And I'm like, oh, here we go again. It's like, yeah, I'm glad it's not just me. Sorry, it's not very Sega, but
I know the three things I will say, the three things that I think put me off it a little bit. I still loved it. I still loved it. I still thought it was great, but it just wasn't two for me is hands down the best game on PlayStation 2. And three, I don't think I put it in my top five PS3 games, and I'm not a big fan of the PS3. But I think the issues for me were it kind of felt backwards in that it started off epic and then you get to the end and it just doesn't feel kind of, it feels like nowhere near as significant. The combat feels a little bit less in depth. I don't think had the, from memory, I don't think the weapons and the
No,
combos were as in depth,
they
and it's a
weren't.
lot
No,
shorter. I'm pretty sure it's like half the length. So it just didn't do it for me. I enjoyed it, but it just wasn't the second game.
I mean, bear in mind, I think it got 90 something on Metacritic, and I when I wrote my review for the site, I gave it 7, which is some people will go, oh, how couldn't you give God of War 3 a 7 out of 10? I'm like, well, 7 for us is good. Really enjoyable, but not like great. And that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right. I'd say that's about right. But speaking of great games, mate, so usually we say, you know, what's your favorite Sega console and Sega games, Sega music? We've done your favorite Sega music. Sega console, I don't think we have to guess about what that's going to be. Get your double A batteries out. So obviously it's a Sega Dreamcast, mate.
Absolutely.
I know we've spoken about it a fair bit already, but you know, obviously you picked one up, you know, fairly recently, really, in 2017 for the first time, and it's clearly left an impression. But what is it that just resonates so well about it? Anything else that you want to say about how it why it resonates so well with you?
I mean, weirdly, the VMU, I know that's an odd thing to be like, oh, that makes it such a great console, but like the fact that you can see your status on Resident Evil 2 and 3 and Code Veronica on it and Dino Crisis, for me, that's the best versions of those games. Dino Crisis, not quite as kind of a lazy port. It was a bit disappointing playing because, like, I played RE2 and 3 on the Dreamcast, and the ports were excellent, in my opinion. High quality graphics, lots of extra content. And then Dino Crisis didn't really add anything, weirdly. Like, it was a bit of a shame, but again, still very good. But yeah, sorry, off a bit off the point. The VMU, I love the VMU. It's just a cool little thing. I wish more consoles still did it. Like, obviously now you'd have to have a portable hard drive in your controller if you to do that, because the games are like 50 gig installs. That'd be, yeah.
The thing that, you know, it's, Microsoft seemed to like they were edging towards that with smart glass at some
Yeah.
point. Remember they had that little brainwave, and then that just kind of filtered. But there was a couple, I can't remember what games did stuff with it now, but they did, like, it worked as a second screen almost.
Yeah.
Just for a while, just during the Xbox One era, and they stopped using it pretty quick. But
Because I think Dead Rising 3 was one, Fable Anniversary, maybe, if I remember right. Something like that, anyway. I can't remember.
yeah, and you know, it would have been. I mean, second screens aren't always, you know, they're not useful for everything. But it's just a nice. It's on the Dreamcast. You know, I think we made. Made really good use of that hardware, probably arguably better than the Wii U did, because you didn't really have anything that kind of, you know, the Wii U did stuff with a full second screen, but I don't think anything quite as memorable as what the Dreamcast did with the VMU,
No, I actually
ironically.
find the gamepad can be a bit of a hindrance because it's the analog sticks are really bad on it. And
It's
I
what.
know that sounds bad because I talked about how much I love the Dreamcast, and I know that's kind of infamous for the analog stick, but the games are made for that analog stick, so you don't notice it. When you're playing stuff like shooters and that on the Dream on the Wii U, it bloody hurts my fingers. Yeah, sorry,
So
off a
the
tangent.
VMU, and yeah, anything else? You know, what else?
VMU, kind of the slate of arcade ports it's got, all the Capcom ports, like for example, Marvel vs. Capcom 1 and 2. I love them games. Street Fighter, best way to play all of those games. It's got stuff like Heavy Metal Geomatrix as well. Little oddities. But again, Capcom, must give them credit. They really supported the Dreamcast. Like a lot of other companies didn't bother. Namco, as I say, two games, which is insane. But Capcom, I think if Capcom, as long as it wasn't mainline Resident Evil or something like that, they brought it to Dreamcast, basically. And even then, the old RE2 and 3 came. So, yeah, credit to Capcom. I like Capcom mostly, to be fair.
I mean, I think they're probably gonna go off another tangent here, but I mean, I think they're probably the, for my money, probably the best developer out there at the moment. They just can't seem to miss at the moment. The Resident Evil remakes are amazing. The compilations they're putting out are just otherworldly. No one ever thought we'd see Marvel versus Capcom collection. They've done that. Then they've got the Capcom versus SNK games coming out, and the next Capcom Fighting Collection, which ironically are all ports of Dreamcast
I know, it's brilliant. Bring us more Dreamcast. Do a Capcom Dreamcast collection. Come on.
Yeah, give us a Capcom Resident Evil collection, you know. So, you mean, you just said yourself, and I think I agree, and I thought myself, you know, Resident Evil 2, 3, Code Veronica, and Dino Crisis are arguably the best versions of those games.
Yeah.
Obviously, with Code Veronica, you'd have to translate the Japanese-only Code Veronica correct to bring it up to kind of the content level of modern games. But still, it feels like a no-brainer to me,
Yeah.
especially since I don't think you can't play 2 and 3 on modern consoles, can you, in their classic guise?
No, you can do it on PC, but other than that, I believe no. So, like you say, good opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, VMU, the games, you mentioned earlier the look.
Yeah. Just have, I don't know what you call it, that sort of, there's a word for it. I don't know if you watch Avalanche Jared. I've heard him use it before, that Dreamcast look, but I can't remember the word he used. But is it shaded or something?
I don't watch, so I don't know, unfortunately,
I
but
know.
it is this very distinctly Sega.
Yeah.
It was kind of, comes from, it's the last era really where you could stick all four machines side by side and probably say, all right, well, that's the Dreamcast, that's the PS2, that's the Xbox, and that's the GameCube. After that, you know, when you get to PS3, 360,
It
it
all
gets a little
becomes
bit
kind
hard.
of uniform. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the Dreamcast is cool as well, because you say about putting it next to PS2 and GameCube. It's weird because it's kind of a middle, because it's got PS1, but it's also got PS2 stuff on there.
Yeah.
So it's like a weird middle ground where you get the best versions of the PS1 titles like Shadow Man and Soul Reaver, but you also get PS2 games like, Echo and things like that, which ended up on PS2 instead. And it's a strange but really fascinating middle ground,
Yeah.
between gens. I forget it's technically a sixth gen console, but it's almost like a middle.
Yeah, I mean, there's often debates about where it sits in terms of kind of the generational power list. And I think what Sega achieved in 1998 when it released in Japan is phenomenal. You think just 18 months before the Nintendo 64 released, which itself came 18 months. Is it 18 months? It would have been longer than that. It would have been 2 years after the PS1 and Saturn.
God,
And in terms of,
that's insane gap, isn't it?
yeah, and you know, that's how close Sega were. But you know, you look at what the Dreamcast could do. You know, you've got at the time, you know, Shenmue was still one of the best looking games on the planet when that
Yeah.
came out. And the stuff that you're hearing now, especially with the development of Grand Theft Auto 3 on the Dreamcast, is that Shenmue 2 wasn't really hitting the ceiling of what the Dreamcast could do, and there was a lot of commands and instructions that you could put in the SH4 processor that could really optimize things. So it's a shame that it went the way it did, because as it was with Sega Saturn and to a degree the Master System as well, you didn't really see what it would have looked like with Sega putting their full might behind it in its latter years and really getting the kind of the most out of it. We don't know where it could have gone, because there are Dreamcast games that their Dreamcast version outshines the PS2 one.
Yeah.
Stuff like Ferrari
Dead or Alive
F355,
2.
Dead or Alive 2, definitely.
Definitely.
Ferrari F355 Challenge. I think
Crazy
Echo was
Taxi.
better. Crazy Taxi. Oh God, Crazy Taxi is awful on PS2.
Oh, I don't, it's really weird. Like I say, it's distinctly Dreamcast. I think the fact you take it to other consoles, it doesn't look the same, weirdly. Yeah.
The PS2 is a very strange video output as well.
Yeah.
It's always at 480i most of the time. Whereas to the extent that kind of the Sega Saturn port of Street Fighter Alpha 3 looks better than the Alpha 3 port on the Alpha Collection on PS2, just
Just
because
that's
of its
kind of mental, isn't
video
it, really?
output. Yeah. It's just the Dreamcast was uniquely set up just so that you had some gorgeous graphics, the way that it had its VRAM set up, the way that the GPU was centered. You know, it was the PlayStation 2 is a bit of a very strange beast itself, where it's
I'm
got
amazed it did
a
so well, seeing as, it sold like, well, let's say the DVD aspect probably helped. Everyone's like,
yeah.
that's a DVD player.
DVD playback and brand recognition, I think. I think it's a case that Sega could have done anything, and I don't think they would have outsold it. You know, we had the brand recognition from the PS1. You know, that was obviously it caught the zeitgeist like nothing else before. You know, the PS1 was the best-selling console ever at its time. You know, smashed the records set by the SNES and Mega Drive to pieces. And you know, you get all of them with all that goodwill transferring to a new console where you've got a DVD drive, so it doubles up as both a console and the fact that it's kind of play your next generation of home entertainment, and it's yours to lose, really.
It even made a good Dreamcast stand.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
It
Oh, I loved UK Resistance. Yeah, one of my favorites. So cool. So favorite, we've done one favorite music track. Favorite console is obviously the Dreamcast, because you are such a Dreamcast fan, and because it features so prominently on your channel. I thought it'd be good to get your top five Dreamcast games rather than go for, make you choose one, and you don't have to do them in order.
No, I was going to say
No,
this.
just do your top your five picks, your five favorite Dreamcast games.
I've got to wrap my brain a bit. I can tell you my least favorite game easily enough. You probably know it. The
Spirit Speedway.
Dark Souls of racing games.
Yeah,
Yeah, that game is abysmal. The only game to date still I've given 1 out of 10. Like no redeeming quality, I'm sorry to say. Yeah, sorry, a bit off topic as I say, but I'd have to have a think. I mean, Soul Calibur is definitely in there, of course.
has to
I
be
mean, it would
that
probably be
game.
top of my list, to be fair, because as I say, I can't really think of any fault with it. It's pristine fighting, mechanics are, insanely smooth, so content rich. I think literally, if you were reviewing it at the time, the only thing it was literally missing was online. And, even then, doesn't really matter. So yeah, Soul Calibur, Skies of Arcadia is up there because that was an incredible JRPG. I mean, I love Final Fantasy VII, Grandia, and then kind of the finishing of the trifecta is Skies of Arcadia. It's such a brilliant game. It deserves way more love.
I guiltily, I didn't play that until, God, it must have been 6 or so years ago, maybe longer. I didn't play it in its heyday. I think I've said this before. When it got to 2000, and I would have been 16, and I bought a Dreamcast with my own. I'd imported the Dreamcast because I wanted one so badly. I couldn't wait for the power launch, so I got one in March 1999. And then, you know, most of the games I bought for it were Japanese, but then when Shenmue came out, I did get a kind of I think it was DCX, the converter disc, so I could read PAL games and play them on there. But the problem for me, still for me, was there was so many games coming out in the year 2000 that it was just impossible to keep up. You know, 2000, you just had just a like an abundance of Dreamcast games. A lot of them first party. And Skies of Arcadia was one of them. And at the time, I did love my RPGs, but I still, as I do now, love my fighting games and arcade ports. I think I kind of leaned more towards them. But yeah, so sadly, I didn't get to Skies of Arcadia until, yeah, maybe 2016 is in my head. But God, what an absolutely beautiful game that is. And one, you know, it's quite a great, you know, in terms of a story, it's very much kind of just pure adventure. You know, it's like it's you know, it's Sky Pirates. It really is kind of a swashbuckling arcade, but it does occasionally hit you in the feels as well,
Oh,
doesn't
absolutely. I mean, Sky Pirates, I'm just, how was it not the best selling game ever?
it?
I hear Sky Pirates and I think, gimme. But no, it's just everything about it was great. Combat, exploration, the puzzles were really good. And again, it was distinctly Sega because I think, was it the same developer as the Shinobi on PS2, the update for that? I think it might have been Overworks.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, and they were really talented. Like that Shinobi PS2 update is really good.
It's
Really,
fantastic.
really good. Bloody hard, but in a good way.
It's
In a
brutal.
good way. In a good way. But sorry, off tangent again. So Soul Calibur, Skies, probably Resident Evil 2. I know it's technically a port, but I'd still argue it's the best way to play that game. Absolutely stunning on the Dreamcast.
Because it's got extra content as well, hasn't it?
Tons and tons of content. I think it's all the stuff from the DualShock mode, the DualShock update that come out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, just and it's peak survival horror. Like,
yeah,
RE2 is still one of the greatest games ever. Another one, Rayman 2, bit of an odd choice, maybe, but I remember reading the what's his name, Michel Ancel, the guy, the director of Rayman.
Yep.
He said that was their primary platform, but Ubisoft said, oh, could you make it for the N64 first? But you can really tell it's designed for Dreamcast. It's an incredible game. Like,
yeah,
a couple of frustrating bits, but nothing major. And one I'm looking forward to covering at some point.
It's a wonderful game. Yeah, and I love the modern Rayman games as well, and the original Rayman. Yes. I wasn't so much into Rayman 3, which I've got on Xbox. But yeah, you can tell that the Dreamcast version is the lead. I suppose it wasn't so much the lead platform eventually, but it was the one that they focused on the most. Because it just seems so perfect on there, to the point where is it Rayman M?
Yeah,
that it's called on like PS2?
Or Revolution.
Or Rayman Revolution. Right. I get confused between them. Whatever one is the Rayman 2 for the PS2, it just feels kind of watered down and not anywhere near as kind of colourful. So yeah, right. it's definitely the best 3D Rayman and best played on Dreamcast. So that's a great shout.
Absolutely. As I say, can't get his name right. Mr. Ancel.
Yeah.
He in an interview said it was basically designed for Dreamcast, and you can, as I say, really tell. So that's one more left. I'll go. Is it cheating if I say Shenmue 1 and 2? Because you kind of have to play both.
Yeah.
It's like one story, but
yeah,
they're both absolutely phenomenal games. Like, it's a bit weird to go back to. Like, have you seen any sailors about and all that? But there's something about it. It's really immersive. Like, you know, when he opens a drawer, you can pick up the item, rotate it in your hand. Like, obviously now that sort of thing's like, oh, every game does that. But back again, you go back to the mindset of the context of 1999 and being able to do that. And it's really fascinating and really, really excellent. And I actually enjoyed Shenmue 3 as well. I know some people weren't as keen, but I was quite happy with it.
Yeah, I was really happy with it.
Just end the story, because keep doing it. Like, we're gonna do another one, and then it takes 20 years.
Yeah, no, I loved Shenmue 3. It was almost exactly what I wanted, to be honest. Yeah. I don't know what other people were expecting, but for me, yeah, it was kind of, you're in the kind of the sleepy Beilu village. You know where Shenmue 2 ended. You knew. Yep. Where the next game was going to start. It wasn't going to be like you're in Kowloon again. It was going to be, you know, quite quiet and almost echoes what you did in Shenmue 1, in that, you know, Dobwitta was, you know, your tiny little sleepy little village and little town in Yokosuka, Japan. It kind of had shades of that, and then you get to the second part and it gets busier, and you get the forklift drive, and it becomes a lot busier. And then I thought the finale was actually brilliant.
Yeah,
you know, I thought that the without giving too much away, I thought the finale was fantastic. The showdown at the end, obviously when you get there, you know it's only going to end one way. But I thought it was done so incredibly well, and I just think it was a shame that people didn't really take to it. I don't know what they kind of expected. I think some of the bad feeling on the Kickstarter may have sullied people on it, especially those that bought it expecting the Steam release, and then it went Epic Game Store exclusive, didn't it?
I forgot about that. That is that's pretty crummy.
I think that soured a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that was a shame. It's a shame it's PS4 and PC only still.
Yeah. I was gonna say, like, there's no reason it couldn't have been on Xbox or anything like that. You know,
it could even be on Switch these days. Switch,
easily, yeah.
Upscale it for PS5 and Xbox Series. I don't know. I just hope that we see the rest of it. But Shenmue 1 and 2, yeah, I think that you can't have kind of a top five without either or both of them. I mean, yeah, they're one game, right? You open your bag, and as long as you've carried over your VMU save, all your Gachapon dolls are in there. So it's basically the same game, isn't it?
I mean, if you had to really say pick one, I'd probably go 2. just for that is it not 50 floor, the how many people you fight, like 70 people in a single fight or something,
Is
or
that
that.
I think that the 70 person battle is in the first one, isn't it? I think you got the
Oh, I'm getting my games muddled, Christ.
yeah, so that's
It's been
kind
a
of in
while.
there, that's in the harbour.
Yeah.
But two is my favourite because I think that it has kind of a bit of everything, and the
Yeah.
music is absolutely phenomenal in there.
Oh my
You've
God,
got
yes.
kind of
Oh.
the first part where you're kind of in kind of the, I'm not sure what that part of Hong Kong was called, but you're like the wise man's quarter and everything, and
Yeah.
then you're oh, what is that thing called where you move the cups and you
Oh,
believe the signs?
I just call it ball game. It's yeah, I know. And again, the music in that game, like you know when you're trained by that dress lady, I'm sorry,
Oh yeah.
the name eludes me. The music for that is so like just epic, like you know, so cinematic for its time. And it's a real shame that North America never got it, like on Dreamcast where it
Yeah.
belongs. I don't know how the Xbox version fares, but I know it scored quite a bit lower.
Yeah, I do mean to get round to playing through the Xbox version. I had in my head, I haven't done it for you. I haven't done it since when did Shenmue 3 come out? Was that 2018?
Something like that, or 2019.
Jesus, has it been that long?
I hate to say it, yeah.
I played through the Xbox One versions of Shenmue 1 and 2,
Yeah.
and fell in love with them all over again. I think the bit where I was just, even though it's as a gameplay segment, it's probably a little bit obnoxious, but I just loved where you're carrying the books about and you've got that really serene music going, and
Yeah.
you have to do the quick time events. I remember playing it thinking I just love these games so much, and I played the third one and I had in my head that I was going to play, I think it was when I was talking to James about it on the show, he was saying that he's been playing through Shenmue undubbed.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, they've got the English subtitles, but the original Japanese dialogue. So I was thinking I might play through that and then play through the Xbox version of 2 after, but I've just not got around to it.
No, I mean, I still don't think there's really any games like Shenmue still. Some
No.
people say Yakuza, but a bit of a strange comparison.
I don't get the Yakuza comparisons. They're based in Japan with semi-open worlds. That's it. The
Yeah.
perspective in Yakuza, I mean, Yakuza on a PS2, that's where the comparison started, right?
Yeah,
Yakuza on a
obviously.
PS2 is a lot more like kind of overhead slash fixed camera angle
Yeah, I
sort
was
of
going to say,
perspective.
I remember a bit where you're walking down one of the streets and it's like static camera, like fixed angle. It's not
Yeah.
Shenmue.
Yeah, it's almost nothing like it. And you've got the combat, I suppose, is similar because it's still kind of Virtua Fighter inspired because it's from Toshihiro Nagoshi. He's
Yeah.
obviously he did have some. He worked in AM2, and he obviously was involved in Shenmue to a point.
And obviously the
And
arcade
yeah,
games in both as
and the
well.
arcade games
It's...
in both. But that's kind of where it ends.
Yeah.
There couldn't be more different, you know. It's not like people have a kind of a routine that they work through in Yakuza where you have to wait for a clock to burn down. Basically,
Yeah.
it's just randomly generated people on the street.
And
Just.
so I don't remember the forklift driving in Yakuza. Then
Yeah.
I must admit I'm woefully behind on that series. I reviewed, I think, the first game in 2018
Yeah.
and Ishin, sorry,
Ishin, yeah.
Ishin. Because that one you can kind of just jump in. You don't need to. The trouble is, as I say, I'm so behind. I don't know where to even start. I played Yakuza Zero, which was really good. I really
Yeah.
enjoyed that a lot, but. As I say, it's just overwhelming. There's so many in like entries.
Yeah, I started them in 2020, or was it maybe 2022? Yeah, I started with Zero because it was on Game Pass, and then I blitzed through them all.
Nice.
So I've just started Judgment. I'm trying to work my way through that, albeit Judgment doesn't support quick resume, which is a bit of a pain.
Yeah, that's annoying. I will say though, Judgment is very good as well. I really enjoyed
Yeah.
that a lot. It's it's what you expect, but it's different, like enough.
Yeah.
Like, I, yeah.
I will say about Judgment, I find, oh God, what's the area called? I should know it. I'm like in it like most of the
So please don't ask me. I can't remember.
time. Camarocho, Camarocho.
Yeah.
It's quite funny, because to a degree, I found it quite unrecognizable compared to
Yeah.
the games, because you've got a very, it's got a lot more of like a sepia tone to it. Everything looks a bit more grubbier and grimier. But then it does remind me a lot more of Kabukicho, which is the real place in Japan. When I went there,
Yes.
it can kind of, it looks a lot more like the real world influence in Judgment, not the kind of more glitzy version that you see in the Like a Dragon or the original Yakuza games.
Yeah.
But definitely recommend making your way through there when you find time.
One day, mate, one day.
The
It's just, yeah.
RPG ones are brilliant as well, especially the seventh one. The only
Oh,
problem with
yeah.
the seventh one is to get the most out of it, and the biggest payoff, like narratively, you'd kind of have to know the rest of the games. So
Yeah.
there'll be
It's the Kingdom Hearts conundrum. Like, you can't just jump back into any of the series. You need to learn all the story again.
I wouldn't say it's quite that bad.
No, no.
I think it's yeah, because Kingdom Hearts kind of gets nonsensical.
I just think of the meme of the bloke and pointing at the board and all. Oh.
Yeah. You could make it, you could pick up Like a Dragon or Yakuza Like a Dragon, that's what they're called over here, isn't it? And
Which
just
is
play
very
through that.
confusing, isn't it? It's very
Yeah.
confusing because now they're called Like a Dragon. It's like,
Yeah.
anyway.
And you got guide and side story. I mean, you could pick up number seven and play through it, and you'd be perfectly happy. It's nothing to say, right? Well, this, you need to play the other game to understand this, but it's kind of from a moment's perspective. There's moments in that game where you'll get boss fights, and you'll be, if you played all the
Yeah.
other games, you're
Leonardo.
like, and if you don't know, you're just like, oh, beat these guys up,
Who's
yeah.
this chap?
Why are they so strong?
Yeah.
Or, like, these bosses are ridiculous. They're so overpowered. And if you know, you're like, yeah, I'm disappointed. This game wasn't really cheap at this point. But yeah, hopefully you get the time to go through those, mate.
Yeah, trouble is, like, with the channel, I try not to play too many huge games at once because otherwise I just have nothing to cover.
Well, now
Yeah.
that was something coming back to your channel. That was something I meant to ask you because I did have that in my notes. Is so you. Very prolific, obviously, over 300 reviews, around 320. You managed to get a review out every single week. And some of these, I hear you say, oh yeah, it's not a very long like runtime, it's like 10 hours. I'm like, how did you manage that, man? That's like me getting a 10-hour game done sometimes is just, it takes me months. I'm currently working through Persona 3, and now I've been working on that
Ooh.
since January.
I was gonna say Persona 3 though is absolutely superb. Are you playing the Reload
I'm
one?
playing Reload.
Yeah.
I actually rewatched your Persona 3 review the other day. It's great. It's quite interesting seeing how different it looks on PS2 compared to the remake.
Yes.
And I think there is a lot of quality of life differences in here, because yeah, I
Yeah.
think you were saying in your review how some of the if you double book yourself, you can lose kind of your, I can't remember what it's called now, but your favor with those
Yeah.
characters, your
Yeah.
bond.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Whereas I don't think that's quite the case. I've never had that happen to me in Reload, and I'm constantly like, the phone, I'll go press the X button, the phone comes up, and I've got all these messages, and I'm like, which one am I going to get the most benefit out of if I haven't lost any? But yeah, that's I just went through, and I just thought that this is this morning when all the family were in bed, and it was the right gaming time. I was like, right, and I beat the last shadow. And then I got what looked like the ending, only it wasn't the ending. And
Yes. I know exactly what you mean.
try not to spoil it for anyone that hasn't got there
Yeah,
yet. And I was just like,
I know what
oh
you mean.
God. Well,
Yeah.
I'm not 95 hours on there at the moment. And yeah, I've been going on that since January.
As I say, some of these JRPGs just do not respect your time. And it's so crushing because I don't, again, no spoilers, but Dragon Quest 11 PS4.
Yeah.
It's on everything now, though. You think, because I was about 50 hours in, I was like, wow, this looks like it's about to wrap up. Oh, fair enough. Nope. Another 50 hours to go.
Yeah.
Something happens. I won't say what, obviously, but you're like, ah, okay, this makes sense. Right, carry on then.
Yep. That's another wonderful game. Funny little note on that one. Works with Quick Resume, which is how I played it. I played it on Game Pass on the Xbox. Works with Quick Resume, but not in a way that you expect. It keeps the game running. So I have no idea what my final playtime on that was. My time on the clock on the game counter, because you know you've got your, if you go into Xbox, you've got your play time. If you progress, it was like 110, but that's not how long you've been playing the game, it's just how long it's kind of been active. But my game time stopped over 999 hours, because during Quick Resume the clock keeps counting up.
Oh my God.
I put it off and I come back to it a day later and it's advanced like 24 hours. I'm like, oh God.
That's funny. That's funny. I love it. You could be like, I play games. Look at my game time.
look how long I played. Yeah. I didn't do the side content on there though. I did think, right, I've finished it and I want to get a physical version. But they're quite pricey on Xbox and I'm not sure if I fancy starting again. So
no, it's a shame. As I say, I feel like Square Enix need to keep putting more of their stuff on Xbox, because
sounds like they are now.
Yeah, I've read a thing saying that they're planning to bring more. I feel like exclusives, like, they're just a thing of the past, you know? Like, just make your game as widely as available as possible.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think exclusive have ever been that tremendously important in the grand scheme of things. Occasionally, you get an exclusive that draws people in. Mario Brothers, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Halo.
But if you look through, especially on the Dreamcast and the Sega Saturn, a lot of Sega's content, a lot of their best stuff was only playable on those systems, and it didn't move then. And I think Microsoft have had some pretty good exclusive games, albeit I think the media have been extremely harsh on them. What was the Point Break? Not Point Break. What was the one where you pause time?
Oh, Quantum Break.
Quantum Break.
That was great.
I thought that's absolutely fantastic. And you look at that and it's got like 60 scores in Metacritic. I'm like, did we play the same game?
That's insane to me. Like, but that's the trouble in a way as well, because a lot of games get patched in that now. So, like Mass Effect Andromeda, Tom played it. I haven't played it yet, but he played it and he said, oh, I don't know why these reviews were so low. I had a lot of fun. I said, I think it's possibly because they played really buggy versions, mate. He was like, it wasn't buggy for me. I was like, that's the trouble, isn't it?
I think Quantum Break was a combination of maybe a bit of that, and maybe, you know, as we were saying at the beginning of the discussion around reviewers having to input their own narrative on things.
There's a lot of bias. There's a lot of bias.
Because at the time we just had the 360 reveal and everyone was still smarting from the whole digital ownership.
Yeah,
conversation and the terrible reveal, and that Xbox has never been able to recover from. But there we go. But you managed to play so many games with decent runtimes on a weekly basis and write them up as well, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, some people would say I'd probably need to go and touch grass, but there you go. I mean, it's just my passion. I love games. Yeah. Like, you know, when a game really hooks me, I sometimes sit there for hours and I'm like, shit, is that the time? You know? Mm. But I had that recently with God of War Ragnarok, which was really quite fantastic. I was surprised, because I don't know why I was surprised, because I like God of War a lot, but there was something about it. It just felt epic, you know?
I was a little bit cool on Ragnarok. I quite liked the remake. I didn't like Ragnarok as much. I think it was because of it just felt too long.
Oh, fair enough.
Padded in some places, but
I will agree with you on that. It didn't detract too much from me. But if I throw the word Ironwood out, you probably know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know exactly
that
what I mean.
Bit, I was just like. I'm literally playing an errand boy.
Yeah,
man.
there we go. Great stuff, mate. So yeah, great selection of Dreamcast games, and a superb choice, obviously, of the Sega Dreamcast console. Cheers for coming on and talking about your channel and your history with gaming.
No, thank you
So
for inviting
looking,
me.
no, it's been a pleasure, mate. As I say, we've been mates for a good while, and it's great to finally be able to talk face to face, so to speak. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what future games are going to be covered on your channel, what future Sega games. And I'd love to see a bit of Mega Drive on there as well, in the future. We'll support everything that you do when it's Sega, everything that you don't as well, but Sega we're extra happy with.
I was going to say, I mean, I always have a soft spot for Sega, and I don't quite cover as much Dreamcast as I used to, but I still love when I do cover them, you know? I mean, it's difficult balancing because I've added more platforms, Switch, Wii U, DS. It's just trying to squeeze it all in because there's so many PlayStation platforms, so many Xbox. But no, I still really love Dreamcast, and I've got, I think I've got a couple more planned for the year. I'm not sure. I have to check the lineup, but yeah,
Yeah, that's the
I'm one
challenge,
of those
isn't
weird people that plan their video lineup pretty much the year before. Just like,
it?
right, so here, this will be a Dreamcast, then I'll do Xbox, then I'll do PS1. Blah, blah, blah. Some people think that's a sign of madness.
Yeah, no, it's that's the problem with you covering everything modern as well, is that you only increase the number of platforms that you have to cover, and hence you've had the Switch and PS5 in recent years. I mean, we're lucky, we're not getting any more consoles, albeit we are still trying to. We had the PS2 video recently, cover a bit of PC as well,
Quite a bit of
but
homebrew as well, at least.
yeah, I mean, I got accused recently of not featuring enough Mega Drive content.
Jesus.
It's
Jesus.
like it's
It's one thing
funky
I've learned
little.
on YouTube. Some people are never happy.
No, it's been great having you on, Shane. Thank you so much for coming on. If you just want to let people know where they can find you
Well,
and your work.
I'm on Twitter. Yes, Twitter, Steady Sphere. You can find our website at www.thepixelempire.net, and my YouTube is Steady Sphere. As I say, I think literally I've got one of those custom URLs where it's at Steady Sphere. So if not, just put in Steady Sphere video reviews and it'll come up.
Check out Shane's channel if you can, and give him a subscribe and his bell for notifications. And speaking of support, if you've enjoyed this video, please give us a like and subscribe, because that helps the channel. Hit that bell for notifications to stay on top of all Sega Guys content. If you want to be extra mega, think about becoming a member, which you can do from as little as 99p. And speaking of members, our premium members that are supporting our video this week are Nick Tullock, Piotr 007, Tom Fun, Resident SD, PWAL, Craig Williamson, Ian Mikowski, Stiff Peaks, G-Man, Sega Saturn Lad, Andy Mackie, and of course our brothers at Sega Saturn Shiro. Thank you all for your generous and continued support. As we close out with Shane's second music choice, which is the boss theme from Skies of Arcadia, that's all for the day, but until next time, we will see you on the Sega side.
Sega.